Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 7, Knowledge of the Absolute, text 21. Yo, yo, yam, yam, tanum, bhakta. Sharayarchitum, ichchati. Tasya, tasya, chilam, shradam. Tameva, viridam, yaham. Ya, ya, whoever, yum, yum, very tasty. They have the expression in Slovenia also, yum, yum. What's that? Which, but this is another translation, whichever. The actual meaning is yummy, but... Tanum. No, we're up to Tanum. Tanum. Form of a demigod. Bhakta. Devotee. Shraya. With faith. Architum. To worship. Ichchati, desires, tasya astasya, to him, achalam, steady, shradam, faith, tam, that, eva, surely, vididami, give, aham, I. Translation of Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I'm in everyone's heart as a super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Purport. God has given independence to everyone. Therefore, if a person desires to have some material enjoyment and wants very sincerely to have such facilities from the material demigods, the Supreme Lord is the super soul in everyone's heart, understands and gives facilities to such persons. As the Supreme Father of all living entities, he does not interfere with their independence, but gives all facilities so they can fulfill their material desires. Some may ask why the all-powerful God gives facilities to the living entities for enjoying this material world, and so lets them fall into the trap of the illusory energy. The answer is that if the Supreme Lord, as super soul, does not give such facilities, then there is no meaning of independence. Therefore, he gives everyone full independence, whatever he likes, one likes. But his ultimate instruction we find in the Bhagavad Gita, one should give up all other engagements and fully surrender unto him. That will make man happy. Both the living entity and the demigods are subordinate to the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the living entity cannot worship the demigod by his own desire, nor can the demigod bestow any benediction without the Supreme Will. As it is said, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Generally, persons who are distressed in the material world go to the demigods, as they are advised in the Vedic literature. Person wanting some particular thing, they worship such and such a demigod. For example, a diseased person is recommended to worship the sun god. Person wanting education may worship the goddess of learning, Saraswati. And a person wanting a beautiful wife may worship the goddess Uma, the wife of Lord Shiva. In this way, there are recommendations in the Shastras, Vedic scriptures, for different modes of worship of different demigods. Because a particular living entity wants to enjoy a particular material facility, the Lord inspires him with a strong desire to achieve that benediction from that particular demigod. And so he successfully receives the benediction. A particular mode of the devotional attitude of the living entity toward a particular type of demigod is also arranged by the Supreme Lord. The demigods cannot infuse the living entities with such an infinity, but because he is the Supreme Lord, or the Super Soul, who is present in the hearts of all living entities, Krishna gives impetus to man to worship certain demigods. The demigods are actually different parts of the universal body of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, they have no independence. In the Vedic literature, it is stated, the Supreme Personality of Godhead as super soul is also present within the heart of the demigod. Therefore, he arranges through the demigod to fulfill the desire of the living entity. But both the demigod and the living entity dependent on the Supreme Will, they're not independent. Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shari artitam ichati tasyam tasyacharam sharam tam eva viridamyaham. I am in everyone's heart of the super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his face steady so he can devote himself to that particular deity. The material world is a playground for the souls to play that they're God in some way. And therefore, since we can't be God, Krishna has to arrange different levels of illusion, because you have to lord it over someone. Now, generally speaking, in the material world, the general yells at the colonel yells at the major yells at the captain yells at the lieutenant yells at the sergeant yells at the corporal yells at the private, and the private kicks the dog. So everyone's looking for someone to be over. And that way everyone has to feel superior to someone or something. Even if you can't maintain a dog, if it's too much, then you get a parakeet. Or you get a fish. You get a fish tank. And that way you feel, at least I'm the lord of all these fish. Similarly, there are demigods that are given that position if they dovetail their desires with that of Krishna's desires. Everything depends, our position depends upon how much we dovetail our desires with Krishna's desires. That's all we can do is desire in the material world. In the spiritual world, desire is sufficient to do everything also. Just by desiring, everything happens. And here, desires, we desire, but nothing happens by our desire. Krishna has to arrange our desire through the material energy, or the spiritual energy also. If we desire the spiritual energy, Krishna also arranges the spiritual energy to perform the activities. Although sometimes it appears that the same activity is either material or spiritual, but actually there's a difference in the energy. One of them is the internal energy of Krishna, the other is the external. One is full of bliss, knowledge, and eternity, and the other appears to have some quality of bliss, knowledge, and eternity, but it's a reflection of the original energy. Something like it says, the Orvam Alamadakshakam Ashvatam Prahur Avyayam That there's a banyan tree, it has its roots upward and its branches down. And the hymns of the Vedic leaves. The one who knows this tree is said to be the knower of the Vedas. So what we're looking at is more or less reflection of the spiritual world. But it becomes a spiritual world when it's utilized in Krishna service. Then it regains its roots. For in our consciousness, it regains its original nature. Actually, it's always spiritual, but it's our consciousness that we think it's something other than spiritual. We see it, when we see it apart from Krishna, then it becomes, in our consciousness, material. And when we see it in relation to Krishna, then we become ecstatic, our senses become enlivened, and purified and awakened, and then we can actually see it as spiritual. Now, we ourselves in this present earthly bodies, we're also desiring. And the material nature is also fulfilling our desires, or the spiritual nature is fulfilling our desires as much as we deserve. Similarly, by pious activities, one may be transferred into the body of a demigod, but the same principle applies. The soul in the heart of the demigod doesn't do anything any more than we're doing anything, but it has a body which is more powerful, and therefore it can desire in a different way. Now, we may desire, for instance, to fly. I remember when we were smaller, and there was a television program called Superman. And all the little children put on their Superman outfit, a big S in the middle. Yeah. And everyone wanted to be Superman. But some of the children took it too far, and they decided to jump off the roof and see if they could fly when they had their Superman outfit on. But they were surprised. So were their parents. Obviously, they couldn't fly. Just by trying to fly doesn't mean you can fly, even if you have a Superman outfit on. So, it's not a question of only desire, it's what we deserve. Now, what we deserve in the present body, we can see more or less, we have some idea after so many years of experience. We know we can't walk on water. We know we can't fly. We know we can't eat glass. Although one can learn those techniques, it may take many lifetimes, and some people try to achieve that. Of course, in Kali Yuga, due to the contaminated atmosphere, the food, the air, the water, the association and such, it's very difficult to concentrate the mind on such a subject matter, and at the same time, our bodies are not adequate for such a concentration. And we don't have a teacher either to teach us mystic power. And even if there's a teacher in the Himalaya Mountains to teach us to us how we should concentrate our mind, we probably don't have the strength to get up the Himalayas, go and visit them. And if we got up there, what were we going to do there? Pitch a tent and get our heater or something? Try to find some place to plug it in. We're not qualified or adequate for such an attempt. Therefore, people go to the movies because they know they can't do anything. They hardly make it to the movies. What to speak of actually doing anything in the movie. But because they have desire to do that, but they don't deserve it, therefore, they like to imagine that they're doing all these things. They try to get the happiness of doing it. Of course, the people in the movie usually break their necks, and they're not very happy either, because they don't have very much qualifications either. Maybe a little bit more than the ordinary person, but for a little name and fame, they're willing to risk their lives. And that way, ultimately, we have to see whether it's a demigod who, by pious activities, previous pious activities, the soul is put into the body of a demigod, where there's more, if one desires, then there's more opportunity to actually, for the material nature, or the spiritual nature sometimes, to perform those activities. Now, if we desire, because we have no adhikari, the material nature will not fulfill those activities. Krishna will not arrange it. But for a demigod, he can do many things. They can fly, they can control air and water, whatever. But all they're doing is desire. But they purify their desires. They've become qualified to become a demigod. And therefore they can feel themselves to be very powerful. And as soon as they feel like that, they fall down. Like Indra or Brahma or whatever. As soon as they become a little proud and think themselves independent, they get themselves into trouble. So part of it, the progress, is to feel oneself subordinate, dependent on Krishna, ultimately. That's the only way of actually making advancement, either materially or spiritually. Therefore, although we're not in the body of a demigod, but we should desire to serve Krishna, because otherwise, if we desire to serve the demigods, to get some material remuneration, so what? It's only going to last as long as this body, and then we have to perhaps get the results of our such desire. And even if we desire to become a demigod, then what are we going to do? Just spend our whole life fulfilling everyone else's desires? And then even try to enjoy ourselves, but then we have to come back again. And who knows when we're going to come back, and what species of life, or what part of Kali Yuga we've come back in. Maybe we miss, you know, we miss the 10,000 years, we go up to the heavenly planets for, live there for 15,000 years, and we come back at the, when Kali Yuga just really heats up, and we're here for the next 400,000 years. So that 15,000 years vacation probably wasn't worth 400,000 years running from little people trying to eat us. So one has to be careful what one desires. Everything depends upon desire. If we become allured by the Vedas and try to worship the demigods, we should know that it's actually Krishna rewarding us with that. But Krishna can reward us with much better things than simply living on a heavenly planet. He can reward us the spiritual world if that's what we want. It's all according to what we have faith in, what we think is attractive, what we think will actually make us happy. And if we do, and we get the right association, we get the right idea, and we strive in the right way, then Krishna will help us and try to encourage us to make progress. And if you already know what the highest platform is and you want to get something else, Krishna will do everything he can to discourage the devotee. But if he persists, then Krishna will give him an opportunity to try out his material desires, and then hopefully, getting a little tired of the whole thing, maybe come back to Krishna again. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. So, as Prabhupada said in the purport, and you also said just now at the end, how we think that it will make us happy. So, this material fulfillment of desires. And we can see that also when we come to spiritual life, and still we bring this mentality with us. And at least at the beginning, we just function on that level. So my question is, how, because even after some years of practice, you can still see, I can still see in my mind how sometimes he goes and starts planning again this. And yeah. So, when will this substantial shift happen? Not just like little by little, but like in a major portion.
Usually comes in an artha nivritti. Well, as it says in the Nectar of Devotion, that there are five powerful processes. Chanting the holy name, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, worshipping the deities, living in a holy place and serving the devotees. And by concentrating one's mind upon one of those five processes, one can experience ecstasy. And it's the ecstasy that transforms our consciousness, and it transforms our understanding and our determination. Vishayava nivartante niraharasi dehinam rasavarjam sopyasya paramdushva nivartate. That the inviting soul may be restricted from sense objects, though the taste for sense objects remains, but ceasing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, one becomes fixed in consciousness. So generally when we get the higher taste, then we become more fixed. But we have to use our intelligence in order to at least strive for it. And when Krishna sees that we're sincere, according to his estimation, then he gives us the intelligence to understand how to do things in such a way as to invoke his further mercy, so that he actually reveals himself to us. So we're trying to inquire the intelligence to work properly, more steadily, more enthusiastically. And as Krishna sees that, then he reveals himself, and we become ecstatic, and then we become fixed in that consciousness. It becomes clear, not only theoretically, but it becomes realized knowledge and experienced knowledge. But that's a gradual process. I mean, compared to reality, then, you know, full bliss, knowledge, eternity. If we think, well, you know, Krishna consciousness is a little bit better than the state I'm in. And maybe if I get a little bit better, then I'll improve, you know, then I'll become perfect. We don't realize what state we're in, and we don't realize what our reality is. We underestimate the material nature, and we underestimate the spiritual nature. We don't know how either one of them actually works. We're so much absorbed in the material nature that we take it as reality, and therefore we think, I'm experiencing reality. But actually we have no real idea what the real reality is. But gradually it's revealed to us, and we'll become fixed, and our determination, our consciousness will gradually get fixed. And our wavering minds won't waver anymore, because things will not seem as attractive. Anyone who thinks back, you know, we've been in the movement for 5 years or 10 years, you think about what you were attracted before, you know, how insignificant it was. And you know, so 5, 10 years, another lifetime, whatever it takes, we'll look back and we'll think, well, this, you know, how could I ever have been attracted to this? We have to be patient. Same time, we have to develop some determination by following the process, and gradually the enthusiasm for the process will gradually develop by experience. It's experience knowledge. Anything else? Yes.
Hello, I'm Thomas. Thank you very much for your speech. How would you explain a big desire of living good? Of living good means also living good life, usually like living comfortably, living, being well, having some connections, also sometimes living good with some girls or some alcohol. I mean, in general, how would you explain desire?
Well, everyone,
the desire of living all the time good. Excuse me for being long.
Yeah, everyone wants to be happy. There's different conceptions of what happiness is. So according to one standard of happiness, one will try for that. But if you experience some other standard of happiness, then some of our present determinations, we'll forget about them when we see something superior. So everyone's striving for what they think is happiness. So that's our nature, is happiness. Everyone's looking for something to love, something to appreciate, something that make them feel good. It's a question of what is actually appreciable, what will actually make us feel good, what will actually in the long term be comfortable. All right, thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.